your participation here, it shows the importance of what Brother Theo is going to talk. Otherwise, it's quite a big group here, and we are happy to have them here with us. And the next talk is the importance of sati, or mindfulness, in walking the Dharma path. So sati or mindfulness, there's much been mentioned about it. So there's right mindfulness and wrong mindfulness. How can we understand whether the sati we practice, is it right mindfulness or wrong mindfulness? Or is it that mindfulness is just mindfulness, there's neither right nor wrong? I believe Brother Theo will share with us so that we may understand what it is and cultivate. So, without taking much time, I think we will all, as usual, go take refuge in the program and observe the precept. So, just before that, just our apology for coming back late here due to misdirection.
Okay, thank you. Very good evening to all, huh? Brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Yeah? So tonight, our topic is understanding the importance of sati, yeah? Or mindfulness, yeah? When you want to walk the path of Dhamma. So this is the title tonight. But before I go into this topic proper, huh, I got some good announcement for you. You remember the last talk I gave at your center, Samatha Vipassana Bhavana. So we are happy to inform that this book, the whole transcript of the talk has already been completed, and we only managed to get it out from the photostat shop yesterday. So today you are lucky. Yeah? I brought along about 20 or 20 copies. Yeah? So I hope it's enough. If not enough, you can let me know, then we will bring some more. Before that, maybe I give to Brother Gan and Brother Te. Yeah? Come. You all didn't have, is it? Ah, come. You can have a copy each. Yeah. Let them distribute. Let them distribute. We don't do it now. Later you distribute. Brother Te, come. One for you. Sadhu to you. You take. Don't worry, you take. Yeah? Okay. So that completes the first part. Eh? We should rejoice because it's very wholesome. And these are for free distribution, donated by our Kayanamita funds. So we hope you can benefit from the transcript. The whole talk, I think almost 1 hour, and the transcript came out 40 over pages. But it will help you a lot, because if you listen, unless you have your past cultivation, it's not easy for you to grasp the actual understanding of what is being spoken. But because we have recorded the talk and it has been converted into a transcript, then I edited it because I want to make sure it's correct and authentic. Because sometimes when they do the translation, or not to say translation, when they did the transcript, the word can be the same pronunciation, but it's actually another word. So the meaning can run. So after I edit all these words, actually look into, then we have a actual edited version that you can read with understanding and easy for you. Yeah? So we rejoice. Huh? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, tonight's topic, as you can see on the whiteboard, importance of sati or mindfulness for you to walk the path of Dhamma. So there are two things involved here. First is this word, sati, translated commonly as mindfulness. How many of you really have a good understanding of what this sati is? Can we have an idea? Anybody want to try? Do you understand what is sati? Yeah? Or what is mindfulness, according to you? What is mindfulness? Anybody want to try? Okay, be present. Moment-to-moment awareness. Anymore. So these are the usual words that you are familiar with, isn't it? Yeah? Being present. Yeah. But this word being present, if you don't understand the actual meaning or actual sati, then you can interpret it in many ways. That's a lot. Yeah. What is the meaning of being present? Then what is the meaning of moment to moment awareness? Because that word awareness is a very new word. Awareness. What do you mean by being aware? To have awareness, there must be, you have to be aware, that then only the awareness come about that. So what is this awareness? If you say present, is equivalent to awareness or presence, with the sea, is equal to awareness. Then what is the meaning? Means you are at this moment just aware. Can you understand? Can follow? Without thought. Awareness means before the knowing. Before the arising of thought. So this part can understand, can follow. When I say you aware, okay? You can have two types of awareness like I explained in the previous talk. The first one is general, spacious awareness without a center. Means you just silent, then it's aware, okay? Before the knowing. The second one is specific phenomenal awareness. Let's say you look at that portrait, okay, of a chief. You have a look. How can you develop awareness of that portrait? You go by this definition. You must have presence. Presence of the moment. Within the moment. Have presence. Means aware. Okay? You have awareness. Before the knowing. Can you be aware of the poster before the knowing? What is knowing? The moment you cognize, perceive, you already know. Understand? And cognize, perceive is the aggregate of mind. Understand? Means it is a condition arising thought. Understand? Then you are no longer aware. That part can follow that. Can follow that. Otherwise, you cannot understand what sati is. So sati is basically just aware before the perception, before the memory retrieve and tell you what this thing is. Understand? Understand? Then the awareness can just be with the phenomena, with the portrait, but no word, no concept, no perception, nothing. Just like that, like a baby. The baby is sitting with pure awareness. There is no memory, nothing. That's why the baby is very, very naive. Understand? No cunningness, nothing. Because they got no memory of anything. They just sitting as they are, clearly. But because they don't have memory, they don't have any understanding, they don't have words, they cannot describe anything. Understand? But in meditation, because we already have the conditioning since our birth, whatever conditioning that you have gone through in life, like the parent who look after you, condition you, the school that you go to, condition you, the books you read, the media that you listen to, or the newspaper, and even now the internet, they all condition you. Then you have your memory, you have your views and your opinion, and all this is already condition into your form and mind. Understand? So with this conditioning, can you still be aware? Can you still develop mindfulness? And that is the question. So as a child, to be aware is very easy. Understand? But there is nothing inside that. But as a human being that has gone through the conditioning in life, can you still do that? That is key to meditation. So if you understand this actual meaning of sati, you will come to a very different understanding when you meditate. And then you can penetrate. Okay? So now we go further. So you say it's awareness and you say it's present. So I link up for you. So present is equivalent to awareness before the knowing. Means before the arising of thought, the perception, everything. Then the other thing about sati is the Buddha actually explain it very clearly. When you are aware, you don't interfere, you don't judge, you don't react. That's why you all use the word choiceless awareness. Can follow that? Means you don't make a choice. You don't say it's pleasant or unpleasant, whether you got like or dislike. You just observe or just maintain awareness. Silent inner awareness.
to be aware of what is going on, so that the phenomena tell you the story, so that your thought is not active, your conditioning is not there to interfere with what you see. Understand? Your knowledge, your views, your opinion, and your condition. Otherwise, you never see. Understand? Like this microscope. Microphone. Okay? How do you see? Because the word microphone appear, the concept and the word, through your memory, you think you know. Correct? Then you don't look at this fellow anymore. Microphone, what is there to see? Means there is no awareness of this microphone. You have a concept and an idea that this is a microphone, but you don't see the detail of it. Understand? Without words. That is what sati is all about. Okay? Then the other definition is, Krishnamurti has a very good definition. He said awareness equals, he used the word silent. Silent? Huh? Silent, he used the word choiceless. Choiceless. Observation. He used the word observation. Or what is. What is the reality, Anasana, of the moment. Or the isness of thing. So from this definition, you will come to know silent means no thought. Correct? Right? To be aware, you have to be silent. Otherwise, you are using thought and you never aware. Can follow that part? Silent, then choiceless observation means you observe or you just pure awareness without making any choice or any reaction to what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel or think. Can follow? Choiceless means you don't make a choice out of what you see, what you hear. So you allow the phenomena to be what it is. Because you don't interfere, then you see things as they are. Without thought, you are not clouded by thought. You are not lost in thought. Preoccupied with your thinking and your reaction and your conditioning. So you see with an open mind, with a choiceless awareness or observation of the reality. That's why you can see things as they are and the understanding will arise. The wisdom will arise. So this part is what you need to develop as understanding of what sati is. That it can help you a lot. Okay? So always remember, silent means no thought. No thought. Otherwise, you cannot be aware. Then when you are observing, it's just like you try to understand somebody. Let's say your kid, or even your spouse, your husband, or your friend. How can you understand them? You have to observe them, isn't it? Correct? If you observe your kid when they are young, then you can see a lot of what they call inherent natural characteristic or character of that child. Or even your husband. But the trouble with human beings is you never observe. You keep on reacting and interfering. Understand? You see only, you have a preconceived idea. No, boy, dangerous. Don't do. Sit like that. Understand? You are never observing that kid. So that's why you don't understand that kid. But you think you understand as a parent. And you say, this is good for you. That's why you keep on giving instruction to the kid. And teaching the kid what to do. Understand? Then you never understand the kid. That's why they react to you. They, at times, as they grow up, they become rebels. Understand? Because you cannot understand them. They have their life. They have their way of thinking. They have their way of feeling and developing the relationship and emotion. So if you don't observe them carefully and see what they are good at, their talent and other things, then there is no way you can understand the kid. Then you just bring them up through your own perception of what this kid is, your own views and opinion of what this kid is. So coming back to meditation is exactly the same. When you have too much Dhamma knowledge, too much views and opinion, then when you meditate, what happens? You're supposed to be mindful and just aware. Understand? And observe the reality, the phenomena. But instead, you're commenting. Oh, this is impermanent. This is anicchang. This is suffering. When you do that, this is what your thought tell you, understand? Through your conditioning, you never see. You never understand what phenomena is. How phenomena come to be. The condition arising state leading to the understanding of impermanent, leading to the understanding of empty nature, then leading to the understanding of suffering behind when you want things your way. All this you cannot see. Well, you lack sati, you lack mindfulness, you are not able to observe carefully until you develop the understanding. And then you understand why you are like that. That's all. Why your habit become like that. Then one other thing that stir you into reaction, into emotion, into fear, worry, anxiety. All these are the Dhamma within your own form and mind. But you never have the sati to observe. But you keep on reacting, commenting, using your views and opinion and your thought to interfere with what you see or what you experience in life. And all these views and opinion, which will condition you to react in certain pattern, will create the delusion for you to entangle your mind. That's how you become afflicted. That's how suffering comes to be. And that's how all of your emotional negativity, selfishness, fear, worry, anxiety comes to be. And because you cannot see through that silent awareness, you are not even capable of understanding how you function as a human being. How your mind works, the dependent origination, all you cannot see. Even all of the mental intention behind your selfishness, your greed, your envy, your jealousy, your fear, your worry, your anxiety, you cannot see. You're completely lost in thought through heedlessness, through self-delusion, sakkadiddhi. So that part as an introduction can follow. Yeah? Good. You can follow, it's very good. So we finish with sati. Yeah? So now to walk the path of Dhamma. So what is Dhamma? Yeah? Teaching of the Buddha, isn't it? Correct? What does the Buddha teach? Yeah? What does the Buddha teach? The essence of his teaching is what? Every day. You're supposed to contemplate, reflect, and understand this essence of his teaching. What does the Buddha teach, basically? Four Noble Truths, isn't it? Which is the essence of his teaching. And from the Four Noble Truths, all his other teaching come to be. Spin off from there. Okay? So, Four Noble Truths are not ordinary truth, no. The Buddha taught Noble Truth, no. What is this word, noble? Noble ones are enlightened ones, correct? Aryas. That's why Aryas are noble ones. So noble truths are truth that will make you noble one. When you understand this four noble truths, then you can become noble one. You can become enlightened one. That's why these truths are very powerful truths. Understand? It's called noble truth, not even ultimate truth. Noble truth, because it can give rise to noble understanding and awaken you and develop the understanding so that you can become enlightened. Okay? So, what the Buddha teach is nature's truth, but he focuses on the noble truth that can liberate your mind. So, when you talk about walking the path of Dhamma, means you walk the path of Dhamma to cultivate this four noble truths, so that you can develop the wisdom and the understanding to awaken so that your mind can free, liberate, and you can develop the understanding not to be afflicted by whatever that arises in life. That's how you become enlightened. No more suffering. There is nothing in this world that can make you unhappy and miserable anymore. That can even condition your fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation. You will have the wisdom to see the reality for what it is and to be at peace with every life situation, no matter what happened to the world, no matter how, what they call, difficult the situation is. Okay? So coming back to this Dhamma, how do we develop the cultivation? To walk this path of Dhamma, the Buddha said there are three phases of Dhamma that you have to go through, understand not? To complete this cultivation. You heard of these three words, isn't it? Pariyatti? Heard of this? You heard of this word? Some of you heard of it, isn't it? What is the meaning? Second one is Pati. Pati. Third one is what? Pativeda. Okay? And these are the three phases of Dhamma. The Buddha said, if you complete these three phases, actually the first two phases are already very beautiful. Three phases of Dhamma. When you walk the path of Dhamma, you have to go through this. So the first phase is what? The Buddha said you need to learn the teaching, correct or not? So Pariyatti is the learning of the Dhamma. Learning of the teaching, or the Dhamma. Or sometimes they call it the doctrine, okay? Yeah. So after you learn, what do? You go to the next phase. What do? Yeah? You cultivate, right? Or you call practice. You cultivate. Means cultivation of the Dhamma in daily life. When you do that, what happens? What will happen to you? Let's say you're successful in the cultivation. You become enlightened. Then you move on to the third phase. Understand? What is the third phase? Pativeda is what? You reap the fruit of your cultivation. Correct or not? So this third one, Pativeda, is to reap the fruit or the reward of your hard work, understand not? Fruit of your cultivation. Or you reap the reward. Reward of your hard work. So these three phrases that you have to go through, you will come to understand that they are very, very important and very beautiful. So the first phase, how do you do it? Pariyatti. How do you develop the understanding of the Dhamma, the learning of it? Through what? Yes. Through hearing. During the Buddha's time, no words, no writing. So you need to hear. So that is the first turning wisdom that I used to share with you all, the notes that I have given you all. First turning is Suttamaya Panya. Wisdom born of hearing the sutta as proclaimed by the Buddha or by anyone who understands the proclamation or anybody who can actually recite to you the actual teaching of the Buddha. So through hearing, if you can develop the understanding, then there is some form of learning. But chances is, this first turning
wisdom is very difficult to come by unless you have cultivated before in the past. Your past life is very, very strong. Then this is possible. Otherwise, you have to move on to the second turning. Second turning is after you have heard, then you reflect, contemplate, and inquire into the Dhamma that you have heard so that you can develop the deeper understanding of it. Understand? So that this Dhamma that you have heard, and nowadays, not only what they call hearing, you can even have books to read about. Can follow that? Just like just now the transcript, you can slowly read. There are textbooks. There are Dhamma books. So, hearing and reading. Whatever you have heard and read, if you still don't have clear understanding, then you have to go for the second turning. You reflect, contemplate, and inquire into it so that you can stabilize what you have heard and read, then slowly assimilate them in as the second turning wisdom. You call that Chintamaya Panya. Wisdom born of reflection, contemplation, and inquiry into all this noble truth that the Buddha has proclaimed and taught. Can follow? So this constitutes the first phase of Dhamma. So most of you all have done the first part, hearing. The second part also, maybe most of you also have done, because you have read a lot of Dhamma book. Understand not? But you have to listen with understanding. You have to read with understanding. Then only you know how to separate the true Dhamma from the what they call deviated Dhamma. Understand not? So when you have the understanding of what this teaching is, which is essentially the Four Noble Truths, then the phase two is you go and cultivate this Dhamma. And this has to be done in daily life, as per what the Buddha explained. Otherwise, you cannot realize the enlightenment. So cultivation of the Dhamma in daily life means you put it into practice. Then when you awaken, you reap the fruit of this hard work or your whatever sacrifice and cultivation. So this phase is the best part of your life. You agree or not? Yeah? The third phase, you no more suffering in that, because you already enlightened and awakened in that. So that type of life is called the noble life. You live the life of a noble one. A noble one is somebody who is already enlightened, awakened. He is very noble in his understanding of life. That's why he got right view. Then the right view will allow him to arise the right thought, followed by the right speech, right action, right livelihood. Then he constantly arise the right effort to purify the wrong thought, means to prevent the arising of the wrong thought or to abandon the wrong thought. Understand not? Similarly, for wrong speech, wrong action, and wrong livelihood, they will know how to arise the right effort to abandon them, then to prevent them from arising. Then they arise the right effort to cultivate all the wholesome right thought, the wholesome right speech, right action, and right livelihood, they are still not in them. Then the last right effort is to purify, refine upon and purify and perfect all this right speech, right action, right thought, and right livelihood that they have already started to cultivate. So this four right effort will bring forth the initial purification of action, speech, thought, and livelihood. Then after that, you need to develop insight, which is meditative wisdom. Then the Buddha said you need to develop samasati. Samasati is right mindfulness that just now your Mr. Tay mentioned. You must have right mindfulness. Otherwise, you cannot develop the wisdom. So samasati is the seventh path factor of the Noble Eightfold Path, followed by samadhi. So samasati and samadhi, these two are related. When your sati is not right, samadhi can never be right. Understand now? Samadhi, as per the last talk, is not the other two types of samadhi. You know, there are three types of samadhi. Remember, I mentioned first is kanika, moment to moment, or sometimes you call it momentary. Second one is upacara samadhi.
Upachara samadhi is assess concentration before you go into absorption or apana samadhi, the last one. If you go into apana samadhi, you develop concentration, energy field, absorption. Your mind becomes very concentrated, trapped in energy field, conditioned state, is not the normal mind that is aware. Understand? That's why it cannot have the right sati. And because of that, you cannot cultivate the four foundations of mindfulness. Yeah. And because of that, you cannot develop the understanding of the Dhamma. And the Noble Eightfold Path also you cannot cultivate, because that mind is very, very concentrated. Too concentrated. Whereas the first one, Kanika Samadhi, is too weak. Understand not? It is some form of collected, but it is not unwavering. Understand not? Means when you live life, when you see something, hear something, smell, taste, or tactile feel or think, your mind can still waver. Understand not? Understand not? You can still be conditioned by what you see. Like lightning, suddenly you have fear. Understand? Or something you see you don't like, with the wrong view, you react. Understand? Whereas a person with samadhi, they can have this collectedness, which is the unwavering mind and the collected and the collected mind or the unified mind that is unwavering. Unwavering means it never waver. At the moment of sense experience, when you see something, hear something, smell, taste, or tactile feel or think, it stays there. Understand? It's collected and unwavering. It never stirs. Never. Then you can see things as they are. Then you can silence your mind and just observe. And that is what meditation is all about. That is what a choiceless, silent, choiceless awareness or observation of the reality is all about. So can follow. Yeah? That will bring me now into the explanation of this title today. Why is sati so important? Yeah? To walk the path of Dhamma. To develop these three phases of Dhamma. Can anybody try? Why do you need sati? What did the Buddha say? Dhammapada words, I give you a hint. Which one? Huh? Ah, very good. The Appamadavagga, the section on heedfulness, which is the first three verses that the Buddha talked about under Appamadavagga? I have been sharing this for many times, but if you cannot remember, you go back and read the notes. Yeah, the first copy of the email compilation note, the word of wisdom by the Buddha, is mentioned there. Dhammapada verse 21. What did the Buddha say? Huh? Dhammapada verse 21. What did the Buddha say? Ah, very good. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die, whereas the heedless are as if dead. Means spiritually you are dead. And what is heedfulness? Under Dhammapada, verse 23, the Buddha defined what is heedfulness. He said, the constantly meditative, ever mindful, and the steadfast one. They will realize, steadfast one, they will realize the born free Nibbana. Okay? So this is what heedfulness is all about. The Buddha said there must be these two elements. Constantly meditative, ever mindful. Ever mindful means what? Continuous mindfulness. Understand that? What is it? Oh, okay. Ever mindful, not every. Sorry, there's a Y extra. Okay, very good. Thank you for pointing out that mistake. So, Constantly meditating means constantly cultivating the Noble Eightfold Path. Understand that? Because the Four Noble Truths you check. First Noble Truth talk about the Noble Truth of suffering, not the meditation, isn't it? Explain to you what suffering is, the eight condition behind. So this only can tell you the reality of life and existence, which you will confront if you live long enough. The second Noble Truth talks about the cause of arising of suffering. Again, that is not meditation, is it? Then the third Noble Truth says suffering need not be. Enlightenment in the here and the now, Nibbana, can be realized. Again, that is also not the meditation, is it? It only tells you that it's possible to be free from suffering and you can realize the enlightenment. That is a Noble Truth. The fourth Noble Truth points towards meditation. Why? Yeah, the Buddha said there is a Noble Truth under the fourth Noble Truth. Namely, the Noble Eightfold Path, is it? If you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. Correct? So whatever that leads to the end of all suffering is the meditation, correct? Otherwise, how can you be free from all suffering? To be free from all suffering is to be enlightened. Correct? So Noble Eightfold Path is the meditation. So constantly meditating means constantly cultivating Noble Eightfold Path. Ever mindful means continuous mindfulness. If you hold on to these two practices, the steadfast one, they will realize the bond-free Nibbana. So from this Dhammapada verse, it's very clear. Without sati, if you don't train your mindfulness until you are ever mindful, you are heedless. Correct? Even if you have continuous mindfulness, like I explained in the last week talk, sometimes you can be very mindful, like those who do Tai Chi, or Qigong. Their movement, they're silent, they move, they are fully aware. They have mindfulness. But if they don't use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, if they use it to cultivate energy field, like Tan Tian, Qigong, everything, for Kung Fu or whatever, then it becomes something else. It's not heedfulness. Understand that? It's mindfulness, but doesn't lead to heedfulness. So that's why the Buddha very specifically say, heedfulness is the path to the deathless. Means you never die. You will sure become enlightened. As per Dhammapada, verse 23. Okay? Dhammapada, verse 23. So that's why sati, mindfulness, is very important. And this sati, you have to train, develop, and cultivate until it become ever mindful, continuous. That's why you must reach upachara samadhi. Understand that? The sati must stabilize until it become unwavering, collected and unwavering. Then after that, if you use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, you are destined for enlightenment. So this is the first very fundamental reason why to cultivate the Buddha Dhamma you need sati. Okay? So this is the first reason. What is the second reason? What else requires sati? When you cultivate, when you develop the learning of the doctrine, let's say you come to understand that sati is very important. Yeah? Then where else in the teaching the Buddha mentioned about sati? Where else? Of course, Noble Eightfold Path has sati, isn't it? So without sati, you cannot cultivate samasati, the four foundation of mindfulness. Correct or not? So without sati, you are heedless. So this is the first reason, heedless. Second one is what? Without sati, you cannot cultivate the four foundation of mindfulness. Sati patana. Careful. Then the third one is what? Without sati, you cannot investigate the Dhamma, isn't it? Clear not? First factor of enlightenment is sati. Without sati, you cannot silence your mind and investigate into all phenomena and dhamma. Understand? So without sati, there is no. No four foundation mind plus no in dhamma investigation. Which is dhamma vichaya. So if you cannot do this, then the second factor of enlightenment cannot arise. So that is the reason why you need sati. Understand? First factor of enlightenment, then only you can investigate into dhamma, dhamma vichaya. Without sati, you cannot. Then what else? You have the five hindrances of mind that prevents you from becoming peaceful and aware within, or developing the meditative state to meditate. Correct or not? So how to overcome the five hindrances? You need to cultivate what? The five spiritual faculty. Understand? So if you don't have sati, there is no five spiritual faculty. Understand? Then you cannot overcome your five hindrances. Understand? Can follow? Because the five spiritual faculty, after sadha and virya, it will drive you to cultivate so that you develop sati. So that you start off by developing the cultivation of sati. And when sati arises, then only the other two spiritual faculty of samadhi and wisdom come to be. So this one, five spiritual faculty to counter the five hindrances, you also need sati. Understand that? And then what else you need sati? What else? This one is part of the seven factor of enlightenment, isn't it? Dhamma investigation. So without sati, there is no seven factors of enlightenment. Understand that? You cannot move. Then the sixth one is what? Without sati, there is no noble eightfold path. Can follow that? This one is clear. Then the other thing that the Buddha talked about is, for sati is life. Understand not? Without sati, you are as if dead. That's why the heedless are as if dead. Means no more spiritual life. So in order to live life, you must have this noble eightfold path. Understand not? To live the life of a noble one. So how do you cultivate noble eightfold path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha? You need sati again, is there? Without sati, how can you cultivate right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood? You need sati to be aware of your mental intention behind all your action, speech, and thought. Correct? Correct? So that leads us to cultivation of the precepts. No sati, no precepts. Because you cannot be aware of your mental intention behind all of your actions, speech, and thought. So this part is the most fundamental. You can't even have mindfulness to be aware of your mental intention. You can't even keep your precept. Understand? If you can't keep your precept, means you cannot avoid evil. Understand? Then if you don't even understand what is good, you cannot do good. Then if you don't have sati, you cannot purify your mind. You cannot follow the advice of the Buddha. Then how can you claim to be the disciple of the Buddha? Can follow that? Yeah. So basically, these are the eight reasons. So no sati, you cannot follow the advice of the Buddha. Means you cannot avoid evil, you cannot do good, you cannot even purify your mind.
Whatever you do, you believe you keep precept is all thought-based. Understand? Huh? Without sati, you use thought. And when you use thought rampantly, or you overuse thought, what will happen to you? You will be so conditioned by using thought, you end up in thought-based meditation. Understand? Huh? And thought-based meditation can never lead you to enlightenment. Well, enlightenment is a state where you realize that is beyond thought, beyond time. So if your instrument is thought-based, you can never realize an enlightenment or awakening that is beyond thought and beyond psychological time, which is also thought. So this one is very clear. Okay? So if you continuously use thought, you become more and more heedless. You are seldom aware, seldom heedful. So that brings me to the last part. We call it space between thought. You heard of this? Space between thought. Let's say you got one thought. This is the first thought. Then after that, you arise the second thought. Then there is this space, correct or not? But how many of you have this space? When you are heedless, what happens? You think a lot, non-stop. Heedlessly, continuously thinking. That's why you hardly got any space. When there is no space, there is no clarity of mind. There is no calmness. There is no inner peace. There is no inner well-being. Understand? So that's why this space is what the Buddha called peace. When there is space, there is silence. Silence. There is silence, then there is peace. Then when there is peace, there is stillness. Or tranquility. Then only there is sati, understand? If your thought don't stop, your mind cannot be silent, understand? If you continuously think, means what? You are preoccupied with what your thought tell you, understand? Which means you are lost in thought. Preoccupied with that thinking, understand? Your mind can only do one thing at a time. Yeah, listen carefully. Yeah? If you are preoccupied with the thought process, heedlessly lost in thought, how can you be aware of the reality? Aware of the moment? How can you have presence? How can you be aware before the knowing? Because you're constantly creating thought, proliferating. And this thought cloud your nature, prevent you from becoming aware. Understand? And this thought creates fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation. Of course, sometimes excitement. Understand? When you have certain things go your way. Understand? But these are worldly thoughts. And you are hardly mindful. You are hardly heedful. That's why the heedless are as if dead. Because the heedless think a lot. Non-stop. Until the thinking become habitual. Because the hindrance of mind are so powerful. They continuously arise until it becomes habitual. Until that conditioning is so strong and so powerful, you cannot get rid of it. Understand? That's why you can hardly be peaceful. Whereas if you meditate, if you know how to relax, then silence your mind, then aware. That is how you decondition the heedless thinking. That is how you develop your ability to be more mindful, more heedful. Some of you may have realized some of this state in your retreat, understand? But the way you do it is a conditioned state because you use thought-based, but you slow everything down, understand? You slow down your thinking, you slow down your movement, you slow down everything. And that does not reflect life, understand? After retreat, what happened? You go back to your daily life. you go back to your daily routine, the hectic way of living again. Then during that time, all your senses are open, understand not? Fully occupied with all the daily life sense activity. Then you are no longer mindful. You become heedless again, understand not? And this conditioning will continue to condition you into heedlessness, and you continue to think a lot. Then when you have enough of it, you say, I must go for retreat. And you go again. But how long? Even for 1 month, 2 months, even for 1 year. No point. Because you don't know how to adjust. You don't know how to come back into society. You always become heedless again. Because in normal living, everything is so fast moving. That's why sati need to be developed and stabilized until you can carry it on into the daily life. Understand that? That's why you must cultivate the Dhamma in daily life. Understand that? Not until you can be mindful and heedful in daily life, you cannot understand life. You cannot see your thought. You cannot see your mental intention. You cannot see the dependent origination. How avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnanam. Then what is vijnanam? Then how vijnanam paccaya nama rupam? All this you cannot see. If you cannot see, how can you understand? That's enough. Then if you cannot see how your mind function and work, how you become what you are, then you cannot understand life. You cannot understand the phenomenal world. You don't know that they are mind-made, condition arising, cause of phenomena, unreal, empty. All this you cannot see. But you cannot insight into phenomena. To insight into phenomena, you must have the silent mind to see things as they are without thought. Then you awaken. Then that nature awaken and understand. Okay? Can I follow them? Okay. If that is okay, then I think I will stop my talk here. Eh? So that you can have about 70 minutes for Q&A. Eh? So this is what today's topic is all about. I hope you all can benefit from what is being shared. So now we can open it up for Q&A. Okay? Yeah. Anybody got any question? You can ask. Okay? Yeah. Brother T, where are you? You better bring your mic and pass around. Yeah. Anybody got question? Or you want to clarify anything, you can. Make use of the time. Eh? We still got about 17 to 18 minutes. Yeah. 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 Okay, very good question. It's very good question. You see, there are time to sit. There are time to train your mind. So to me, it's very clear cut, very simple. If you do sitting, you must know why you do sitting. You don't go and sit because people say, oh, meditation, you must sit. And then you become gullible, you go and sit. Then the Zen got one analogy. You know. If sitting can make you enlightened, all the frog will be enlightened. So, but the frog sit throughout the day, not stop. That's all. Sitting doesn't make you enlightened. That's all. Sitting is useful initially. You know why? When you go to retreat, when you want to silence your mind. But in the midst of daily life, your senses are open. You become so heedless, you think a lot. Because there are too much activity disturbing you, understand? Distracting you. And your mind has already been so heedless for so long until the hindrances are so powerful, they create habitual tendency in you. And your wrong view is also so heavy, so strong. That's why you cannot live the heedful life. So what you do? Oh, they say you go meditate. You go retreat. So in the retreat, what happened? Everybody keep precept, understand? The setting, the environment, very conducive. So you can sit. Clear or not? Because your form and mind, whether you are peaceful or not, depend on the surrounding. Understand? If the surrounding is peaceful, you tend to be peaceful. That's why you can settle down. Then they teach you to do things slowly.
eat also mindfully, walk also mindfully. But that mindfulness, you have to check, is that mindfulness? Understand? If it's thought-based noting, then you ask yourself, is that mindfulness? The moment I label and verbalize, like the notes I share with you all, I don't know whether everybody got or not, then actually you dull your mind, understand? You create more thought, understand? So how can you be aware? Awareness is body and mind as one silent without thought. That's why you walk, you're just silent and aware. Then you turn, you move, and that is daily mindfulness. What the Buddha said is, because of this heedlessness, you need to go into retreat and do some formal meditation so that you can train this mind to become heedful, mindful. If you can't even do it in a retreat, how can you do it in daily life? Understand? The daily life is totally different. Understand? You know how much activity you are exposed to or not. The moment you come out of your house, you have to be careful of so many things. No? Your senses are wide open. No? Especially if you walk or you drive, then you work. Understand? You have to use your senses. You have to think a lot. You have to work, earn a living. You have to attend to your worldly problems, relationships, situations. Then you may have sickness, or your loved one may have sickness. Then you worry about their health. Understand or not? Then you worry about your career, your job. You worry about so many things, your wealth, your property, your children. Then later even grandchildren. Understand or not? Then for those who are young, they worry about their future, their career, their prospect. Then sometimes they worry about their family, financial problem. Then they worry about their parents. Understand? So all this creates so much fear, worry, anxiety, and activity to make you very heedless and very busy. So unless you are serious about the cultivation, you will not be able to do it in daily life initially. That's why you need to train. You go into formal meditation. When you go into formal meditation, all your senses are actually less active. I won't say it's not active. Less active. Understand? Where you close your eye, you relax, then you're silent. Of course, you can still hear. Understand? Of course, your heedless thinking can still continue. Understand? That's why you go to a retreat or you go into a meditation. You find that the first day is very difficult to settle down. Understand? Or the first two sittings is very difficult to settle down. It takes a while. That's why you need to decondition the heedless thinking. You got to allow the environment to settle you down. Then you got to do certain type of training to settle you down. But what did I teach you? Because you know you already have this problem of heedlessness born of the hindrance. What must you do? What did I teach you? Those who attend the Thursday class, they know. You must cultivate the opposite five spiritual faculties, isn't that correct? Correct, huh? That's why you go and do puja. You don't have to go to retreat. Don't have to do formal meditation. You do your puja, your saddha will develop. Then virya, then you pay respect mindfully, sati will develop. That's why you must have a daily religious routine to do this. So that when your spiritual faculty is there, the hindrance is gone. No need to fight the hindrance. Then when the hindrance is gone, you are more heedful already. Because without the hindrance means you don't have sensual desire, you don't have ill will, you don't have sloth and torpor, which is sleepiness, you don't have restlessness of mind. That is the most important. Then you don't have doubt. Because when your faith in the Buddha and his teaching is so stable, you become very composed and very calm then. Correct? When you have that saddha, that faith very strong, you got no more doubt in that. Because you believe strongly in the Dhamma and the Buddha. So no more doubt. Then you are very calm, very composed, no more restlessness. Understand? Then when your virya builds up because you see the importance of the Buddha's teaching, it can make you enlightened. And he is the fully enlightened one, no? Teacher of man and God, no? The wisest and the most virtuous in the world, no? So if you can follow his advice and cultivate, you can have the potential to be enlightened, no? That will drive you, is that? So virya will arise, understand not? Spiritual zeal or tenacity to walk this way, to learn the teaching, to cultivate the first phase of Dhamma.
That's why the virya will not make you sleepy. Understand now? Sloth and torpor will not come and hinder you. Then after that, you determine to cultivate, means you determine to cultivate sati. That's why importance of sati in walking the Pava Dhamma. Well, without sati, you are as if dead, heedless. The heedless are as if dead. So you know you must develop this cultivation of sati. So what is sati? That's why you need to understand. Sati is just awareness before the knowing. That's why when you pay respect, body and mind aware, there is no thought. That is sati. Don't go and note, bowing. You finish, you are lost in thought, verbalizing, and yet you think that is sati. Understand? So that's why you must understand what is sati. Then when you are able to do it, then you realize, whenever I am mindful, I got no thought. Then I am peaceful. Then silence is already there. That space between thought is already there. Understand? That's why with the spiritual faculty of sati, silence will start to arise. Understand? Otherwise, you don't have sati one. Sati is the awareness before the thinking, before the proliferation of thought, before the knowing. So how can you have sati when you are heedlessly thinking? So that's why in the meditation, I teach you, if you still have this heedless thinking, you start to decondition the heedless thinking through what? Through what? Mind sweeping method. Understand? What is mind sweeping method? You silence your mind, relax. Then you feel. You don't think. You feel your forehead. Feel. Then you will detect one. Tension, stress, or whatever. Then you will just silently relax. So you feel relaxed. You don't think. Understand? Whether there is any tension, stress within, or tightness, you just relax the mind. So if you sweep it down to your eye muscle, do the same, again you feel and relax, you never think. Understand? This will allow you to slow down your heedless thinking. But when you feel, your mind is doing something. It doesn't think, it just feel. Like you feel the floor, hot and cold. It won't think on, understand? You have a perception of that hot and cold, but it never think. Then you can stay there. Then when you stay there long enough, your heedless thinking gets deconditioned, then the new way of living comes about. Understand? That's how the mind sweeping method makes you more calm, more peaceful. Then as you sweep down to your facial muscle, you relax everything. The advantage of mind sweeping method is tremendous. First, it deconditions your heedless thinking. Okay? Second, it trains your mind to be at the location you want it to be. Understand? When you want it to be the forehead, it will stay there and you just feel relaxed. Understand? So, what you are able to achieve is multi-prone of advantage. When you do the mind-sweeping method, you first decondition the heedless thinking, then you develop calmness. Understand? Where you only feel. Feeling is very near to sati. Understand? It's not sati yet. But when you feel, you keep on perceiving. Understand? Hot or cold, relax or not relax. But at least this is not thinking, understand? This is not heedlessly lost in thought, understand? There is no fear, no anxiety, no worry, just silent, relaxed, and aware that you feel. Then as you sweep it down, you combine with metta, understand? When you are at your facial here, you relax every part of your facial muscle. You feel very peaceful, understand? When your body is in a state of relax, the mental will also be in the state of relax, understand? You are not peaceful and restless is because of what? You got a lot of stress and pressure from your daily life. Understand? When you have a lot of pressure and stress in your daily life, you actually introduce a lot of stress into your physical body. Understand? That's why you cannot smile. You cannot relax. There is so much tension everywhere. Understand? And this is very, very, very dangerous for your health. Understand? This one can condition you into what they call a lot of high stress situation that leads to the breakdown in your immune system that trigger off your what they call disease. Understand? The disease like cancer or this thing. When your immune system is low, it can come about. So stress is an indirect and direct cause of what they call failure in immune system, in all the disease, in all the sickness and all those things. All of your unhappiness, your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow and lamentation come from stress, worry and anxiety. Understand? Huh? That's why you have to meditate to silence your mind. Then you use this mind sweeping method. Then later you combine with metta. Metta is very important. You radiate love. May I, this body and mind of mine, you feel your body and mind be well and happy. You feel as you recite well and happy, the whole well-being of this whole body and mind of yours. Every cell of it, understand? Then you feel the well-being and the happiness. Then what happened to you is, when you do this type of mind sweeping method and metta, you actually bring about inner peace, leading to inner well-being, understand? And this is what you need, to have positive energy, to have the piti, the sukha and the pasati, to bring about inner peace, inner joy, inner rapture. And this positive energy will build up your immune system. That's how you can recover from whatever disease or stress. Then you heal very fast. You like charge up again. That's why if you are very tired, very stressful, you just silence your mind, go and relax and meditate. Then you recover very fast. Understand? Compared to people who don't know what to do, they go and take sleeping pills. Because they say, cannot sleep. A lot of problem out there. So, a lot of worry, a lot of what they call deadline, stress. Then those in depression worse. The cocoon of thought keep on repeating inside. That's how they become miserable, afflicted, suffer a lot. That's why you have a lot of compassion for all these beings. Because of delusion, because of ignorance, they became heedless. And they don't understand what is going on. They don't understand the noble truth. They don't understand the cause of arising of all this suffering. They don't even know what suffering is. Without the Dhamma, you cannot free. You cannot liberate. Understand? So it's not a question of must I sit or must I do daily mindfulness, which is better. It's a question of your understanding. When you understand, when you need to sit, you sit. Understand? People who sit is because they haven't trained their mind. Understand? You understand? Your mind is not trained, heedless. That's why you need to train. We are in a retreat, in a formal meditation, like I said, conditions are more conducive. If under that circumstance, also you cannot be mindful and heedful, very sorry, I can tell you. There is no way you can develop daily mindfulness. Understand? Even if you can do it in the retreat or in the formal meditation, if you don't determine to carry this trained mind state or heedfulness into your daily life, you still fail, I tell you. That's why I always tell those who attend my meditation class, the real meditation only begins when you have stabilized your sati and developed the upacara samadhi to go into daily life and do your daily mindfulness, to cultivate the four foundations of mindfulness. That is the beginning of real meditation. Before that, it's just training your mind. Understand? That's why all the methods and techniques are only skillful means to anchor your mind, to train your mind to develop sati, understand? And to stabilize it. To me, it has got nothing to do with meditation. It's just to train the heedless mind. Understand? Whereas your true mind, no need to train. It's already in sati all the time. But you don't understand. You can never touch it. You can never understand that it is already there. Because you are constantly lost in thought. Heedless. Never have a moment of silence. No space between thought. Even when you sleep, you dream. You think a lot. You chatter a lot. Understand? You talk to yourself. Yeah? They say, what? Sleeping. While you sleep, you walk and talk. So, a lot of human beings that are heedless, they are like that. And it's very pitiful. Understand? So clear. You can ask. Yeah, pass the mic. Pass the mic.
When your mind is concentrated,
yeah.
Can you develop that when you are in your daily practice?
It's
not concentration. I already told you, sati is awareness, not concentration. No, the mind, it should not be in concentration. The mind is in sati. And that sati stabilizes into samadhi. Samadhi is not concentration. Samadhi is unification of mind, collectedness of mind. Then when samadhi becomes very stable, which means the mind enters sati, then this mind doesn't need object of meditation. It's already in sati. All the time, with the wisdom and the understanding, it doesn't need to think. It can just be aware. It don't need any object to anchor it. That's why you read the Mahayana Sutta, the Diamond Sutta. Inside there, he mentioned, the mind must have no dwelling. Understand? The mind must not dwell anywhere. If it dwells on a meditation object, it is dwelling there. That's why Hui Ning, the sixth patriarch, the moment he heard that stanza, he awakened. Because his mind is already without dwelling. That's why he knew. That is the true mind. Understand? So daily mindfulness is upachara samadhi. There is still awareness. But this awareness is continuous, very stable. Because of the faith, the spiritual faculty. The faith that lead to the virya, that lead to the sati and samadhi. Then with sati and samadhi, you see things as they are. And you develop the wisdom because you can understand, you insight into phenomena. And this wisdom stabilizes the mind to have upeka. Upeka means equanimity. It will not stir. It will remain collected and unwavering. This is the last factor of enlightenment, upeka. Born of wisdom. Not born of a conditioned state in concentration or absorption, where samatha bhavana people are trapped inside that. That one, the latent tendency, the defilement, the anusaya, the asava, they are not rooted out yet. They are still what they call suppressed inside. Cannot come out because of the energy field, because of their jhana, their concentration. Okay? That one you read the note. The last week talk, last Friday, I think 1 month ago or what, I forgot already. Oh, sorry, April 24th, the talk. Now it's June, almost 2 months. April 24th talk. You go and read. You have a copy, go and read. It's all clearly explained inside there. Okay? So don't go and get me wrong. I'm not asking you to develop concentration and carry it out into the daily life. And try to live like that. Because when you are in concentration, your mind is in a conditioned state of energy field. Understand? It's very difficult for you to live like that. Because the mind is concentrated with carrying this energy field. Understand? That's why these people like to be in formal meditation. Enjoy the peace within. Understand? A very calm state. Then because energy field is so strong, they have to use it. Otherwise, no outlet. They become miserable. That's why they use it to develop psychic ability, occult ability. Otherwise, no release. Whereas the cultivator of the way, there is a gateway where they can release any energy field, whether positive or negative, they can release it through the gateway. And that one, you need to silence your mind completely. And then it connects. And then only you can understand the Dhamma. That's why without sati, you are as if dead, heedless. Okay? Yes. Okay, I think I know why you ask. Well, the thought is curious. The thought want to know. And I can be very frank with you. This, no amount of explanation can let you understand until you realize this state. Understand?
If you try to use thought to conceptualize and understand what this state is, then you will ask that question. Does everyone that has space between thought feel the same? So, it's not like that. Some, they can go into concentration and all the thought kill into one point, also no thought. That one can be hours and days. But that type of no thought is a conditioned state where all the thought are killed into one-pointedness. And there's a lot of space. That's why they have a lot of calmness, a lot of stillness. They are like in the state of upeka, equanimity. And in that mind state, they like enlightened. Nothing can disturb them. And that is a different experience. That is intense stillness, silent. But the one that do the daily mindfulness is totally different. It's very beautiful one. Because most of the time they are aware and heedful. Like I tell you, either general spacious awareness. Even this moment as I share all this talk, I hardly think, I tell you. I only retrieve memory that I need to use to express to you. Apart from that, I don't need to use thought. Understand not? But there is no necessity. Sankara anicang, sankara dukkang. Why you want to use thought when you don't have wisdom? But when you have wisdom, then different. Then the thought you use, the user of thought, is different. Understand? User of thought with wisdom will arise right thought, wholesome thought. That's why these thoughts are not stressful. Understand? This thought doesn't bring about suffering, no delusion. That's why the Buddha said, under the first noble truth, final summary, the enlightened one, the Arahant, the aggregates, the five aggregates of form and mind is non-grasping. Whereas the Puttijana, they are grasping. Upadana kandas. Understand? So when you are in that state, you don't need to explain on. Because that form and mind that go through that understanding and training will know what to do on. They hardly think. They are most of the time aware. But to live life, you need to be aware of things. Understand? There's a phenomenal awareness is very important. So you are aware with the phenomena. The moment you are with the phenomena, you want to know, you can know. The moment you know, you perceive, then you aware again. Understand? And most of the time, you're just aware. Understand? Even when I drive, when I talk to you, when I see things or whatever, it's just the phenomenal awareness. Understand? Then when I am silent, there is a general awareness. That's why when you blink your eye, you may move your hand or whatever, or any phenomena, my nature can perceive them. But the moment it perceives, it stops. Understand? It does not proliferate. It does not go and think until it gets conditioned into negativity. Understand? There is no more delusion to condition that thing. You can understand? Yeah. So the space between thought, you don't try to understand now. You go into a retreat, you can experience it very fast. You just have to silence your mind. Then you will see the big difference between your daily life when you are heedless and in the retreat when you are heedful. That's why if you have wisdom and you are mindful, you know how to reflect and contemplate after you come out from the retreat, you determine never to be heedless. You will not go back to that type of heedless living anymore. That's why you are determined to train. Until in the daily life, you are like in the retreat. Understand? No different. Yeah. That's why in the retreat, you see, I seldom sit there like a statue. Understand? Sometimes I need to sit with yogi because yogi is encouraged when they see the teacher or whoever they're sitting. Oh, they say must sit. Then when I bow, they also bow. Then what for? Means you try to follow what I do. You don't understand. You have to develop the understanding yourself. When to sit, when to walk, when to silent, when to reflect, when to contemplate. That's why to the Zen, meditation is daily life. Understand? Everything is Zen, they say. Drinking a cup of tea, walking in the park is all Zen. Understand? Even sleeping is Zen. So meditation, like the Buddha say, can be done in any posture, anywhere, any place, anytime. That's why you have the four foundations of mindfulness. After you train your mind in anapanasati, when sati develop, mindfulness of in and out breath, then the next category of cultivation under kaya nupasana is
to be aware of the four postures. Remember? Standing, sitting, walking, and lying down. Then after that, sati sampajana means the daily mindfulness. Mindfulness and clear comprehension of all activity that connects these four postures. And this is daily mindfulness. This is the satipatthana that you're supposed to do. Then when you are doing that, it's called kayanupassana. Kayanupassana means what? You anchor your mindfulness to your kaya, understand? Not? That's why body and mind as one, understand? Not? To your physical movement activity, to your breathing, to your rising falling. But these are your kaya's movement, understand? Not? That's why you anchor it there. That's why when we were in Taiwan, this Fa Gu San, they got a very good way of defining what is Zen. They say Zen. They say the teacher used to tell them, is it 16 words in Mandarin, is it? 身在哪里? 心就在哪里? That is very beautiful, isn't it? Very powerful. Isn't it? 身 is body, isn't it? Wherever your body is, your mind must also be there. That is Zen. Then he said, the next thing you need to do is relax, 放松, 全体放松, 那就是禅. Actually, that part is only kayanupassana, understand? But you need that one to start. Then later on, when you can anchor to kaya, you can anchor to feeling, you can anchor to content of consciousness. That's why you got the second foundation, vedanupassana. Then you got the third foundation of cittanupassana. Then the last one is anchor to dhamma, understand? You constantly aware of dhamma. The first category of dhamma is what? Five hindrances, see? Five hindrances. When you know the hindrances are there, you must be aware. Understand not? Then you must develop that silent mind to observe and understand how does the unarisen hindrance come to be. Correct not? In the sutta, it's written that way, isn't it? Then when you see long enough, how this arisen hindrance cease to be, you will also understand. Understand not? Then when you meditate until your wisdom is so stable, then you will come to understand that how in the future this arisen, what they call hindrance, can never arise anymore. Understand? Not? How in the future there will be no more arising of this mental hindrance. That time you really arahant there. Only arahant, no more five hindrance. Anagami still got restlessness. Understand? Not? Understand? Not? Restlessness is still a hindrance of mind. So, when you develop the four foundation of mindfulness, the Dhammanupassana, you will go through all this understanding, and you will understand the Buddha's teaching very clearly. Okay? I hope I answer your question. Huh? Actually, I forgot your question. Also. I don't know how I end up with this. Also. Oh, yeah, yeah. He tried to understand whether it's the same for everybody. Thank you for reminding me. That's why I don't carry in the memory. Understand? That moment I speak, that moment I hear and share, is out, gone, no more. And you ask me, unless there is condition for me to recall, it's never there. Understand? But at that moment when I speak, there is awareness. But I don't retain in memory. Understand? So because of that, it's gone. Then this mind, very funny, you know, cannot even recall, you know. Then how can it get attached? Understand? But this brain is really like that, non-grasping. It cannot grasp at anything. You try to ask me to remember something, it's very difficult. I have to write it down. Unless it's every week one. Like Tuesday, I got to go and teach. Thursday, I got to go and teach. Then it become like routine. Then I no need to remember. Oh, Tuesday already, must go to that class. Or Thursday, must go to that class. So no need to remember one. But you suddenly come and tell me your name, please. I cannot remember one. Even Brother Tay, I took so many sessions to remember his name. I keep on asking Brother Gan, what is your colleague's name? And until now, I don't know his full name. Brother Gan, I know, will send me email. Gan Kim Chuan, that one I know. That's why that mind is different because it's non-grasping. It cannot hold on to anything. It's just like that. You ask me why, I also cannot tell you why. Because it's like that. Understand? Like coconut, huh? You go and grind the thing, then become coconut milk. Huh? Then you cannot reverse it back. Understand? Unless you go through organic chemistry and do all those things. Huh? Yeah. Okay.
So next time, we all will have to go back to school, just as school children, coming here and wearing the badge.
No need, no need. I don't want to remember. Already enough thing to remember. yes.
My wife say I'm very bad in memory.
Okay. That is a very good comparison. So a lot of people used to tell me, but till now I also cannot remember already. But I look at your age, there is another possibility. They say, this body as you age, the brain cell, the new one, no more. The old one still there. There's an old thing you remember. New thing you cannot remember. And that one is nothing to do with non-grasping. So, if you're the new cell are not there, the memory of new thing is not strong. But the old one, anytime people talk on here, 30 years, 40 years also you remember. How your girlfriend, what, all you remember. Understand not? So that one is different, okay? So don't go and like assume, no. Oh, brother, they will say, if I don't have memory, means I non-attachment already, non-grasp. So you try not to remember anything. I cannot remember, lah. Don't tell me, lah. Then your thought is teaching you how to do all those things. It's like thought-based meditation, where they say, you must have mindfulness. And what is mindfulness? When you're not rising, falling, that is vipassana. Then you keep on nothing. Where you are greedy. Understand? Gullible. Because you are conditioned to believe that this is vipassana. And you are meditating. You want to do vipassana. And then you keep on looking for it. Who is looking for it? The thought is looking for it. Understand? And when thought is active, how can you be mindful? How can you be silent? How can you understand what is going on? Okay? Yes. Yeah, I heard of that too, selective memory. He said, I cannot remember. But certain things he remembers very clearly. Then now he is even commenting on certain things. But it's okay. He is the way he is. Don't worry. You have to accept them for what they are. Otherwise, you develop aversion, dislike, and so on. You learn to accept things as they are. Accept them for what they are. Then you are at peace. Then there is no such thing as you like or you don't like. Because it's just a form of mind. Understand? Not so real. Conditionalizing causal phenomena. No reality. The whole world is a world of consciousness. Understand? And what is consciousness? Mind state. Come and go. Like the Buddha said, impermanent. Then how come you become afflicted? Entangled. Because you arise a mind. Understand? That's why the Buddha said your mind, which is the mundane mind, not your true mind, is the forerunner of all things. Understand? When mind arises, everything comes to be, like real. That's why the deluded one, the ignorant one, they get deluded by the phenomenal one. Then they get themselves entangled. That's how suffering comes to be. They give meaning, they attach, they grasp, they cling, because they think all these are real. My loved one, my property, my wealth, my career, my whatever, my bungalow, my car, my beautiful wife, girlfriend, all this. You attach and you cling through what? Through memory, through thought, through labor. Not knowing that you yourself is only form of mind. And this is not really you. Conditionalizing form of mind. For you to come to this world, to live life, to experience all of the beauty and wonders of life. But when you deludedly grasp and cling to this form of mind, which is a fine aggregate of form of mind, suffering will be the result. Understand?
When you cling, you worry about this body getting old, getting sick, and one day die. Where you think is you, then you worry about your health. You worry about your career, your relationship, everything that is related to this form. That's what the Buddha calls sakkayadity, self-delusion. When there is a self, then it conditions your selfishness, your greed, your lust, your emotional negativity, your fear. That's why the three evil roots keep on manifesting. But when you realize that this is non-self, not a permanent unchanging entity, condition arising, cause of phenomena, just karmically conditioned out for me to use and live, then that understanding transforms you completely. Then there is no more fear. Fear of this body getting sick, getting old, yeah? And one day die. No more. Understand? Your mind can free. Then you can accept whatever that happened to this form of mind. Then everyone you see, you realize they are only form of mind. No reality. No individual, nothing. That is the ultimate understanding through wisdom. That's why the Buddha says, sabbe sankhara anicchang, sabbe sankhara dukkang, then sabbe dhamma, all of dhamma, conditioned and unconditioned, anatta, non-self, empty, no reality. Okay? We better end. Almost 10:20. Okay. Can I pass this to Brother Chua? Brother Chua, he sent me here. Where is Chua? Come. You can do whatever you want. Sadhu to you. I rejoice. Thank you so much. You can offer back if you want to. Sadhu. Okay, we will chant the Pali version. Start with this Akasata Chobobata, sharing our merits with all the devas. Akasata Chobobata Devanaga Mahindika Punyang Tang Anamoditwa Chirang Rakantu Lokasasana Itta Wata Chaammehi Sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menyatinang hotu Sukita hontu nyatayo Ipmina punyang kamena Mame bala samagamo Satang samagamo hotu Yawa nivana patiya Sadhu. Okay, thank you so much for coming for the sharing. Thank you.